Hello and welcome to Take from Caesar.us. My name is David Merlin. We're going to discuss some authorities relevant to Tax Code Section 83. And along the way, I want you to stay aware of the fact that nobody else out there is teaching Section 83, when in fact in 1992 I began teaching this as part of some seminars I was offering regarding the contents of the tax code. And I don't think you can miss Section 83 if you, in fact, have read the tax code. And I don't know what business anybody has claiming to be a tax expert if they haven't read the tax code. And if you read the tax code, you arrive eventually at Section 83. And so what you'll see is that I actually read all of that they apply to the individual who sells their labor for a living. All of us who go to work each day, possibly for an employer, maybe a sole proprietor, self-employed individual, for fees, tips, commissions, salaries, and pension and sick pay. I found a host of case law that says it's universally applicable to all compensation for services. So, as opposed to the anti-tax movement, the patriot movement, whatever you want to call it, I'm focusing on a statute that the courts have said is universally applicable to all compensation for services. I don't have a theory. I have an obligation to comply with this statute because the courts say that it applies. If it protects me in some way, the good news is that the IRS also has to comply with it. And so I got into the language of Section 83 and found a certain structure, found certain terms. And with what I know about how to interpret statute, I got into the language of Section 83 and I found a certain representative set of rules that place the value of my labor out of their reach. So we're going to go through these authorities with the understanding that Codebreaker, the Section 83 equation, the manual I wrote in 1994 is available through takefromcaesar.us. It's the first, last and final word on Section 83. There's nothing that you can say about Section 83A that is not already in that manual. And I was teaching it as early as 1992. I wrote the manual in 1994, and the argument is solid enough to where the government claims that they have no knowledge of Section 83 rather than get into it. As you look at the authorities page that I've drawn up here, there's about 12 pages. You see blue number one. I'll take you through 1 through 5. There's 5 tenets that I want to explore, which will encapsulate for you the framework for this particular statute and my interpretation of the statute. We see that this is not legal advice. Anything you hear that sounds like legal advice should be considered to be something somebody else might do on a planet far, far away where the law matters. The law doesn't matter here. I prove it on a daily basis. I'll show you what I feel the law says. If I'm wrong, you can provide your counter brief, your contrary interpretation of the statute. The government can't provide theirs, so if you indeed have one, you should go to the Department of Justice right away. They need you. Authorities relative to the interpretation of Tax Code Section 83. Number one, Tax Code Section 83 applies to any and all compensation for personal services actually performed. Here's Cohn versus Commissioner, and these cases are in chronological order. This particular case is from USTC, United States Tax Court, 1979. You can read the whole thing, but I'll only touch on the part that's in bold and italics. Respondent, that's the IRS in this case, respondent contends that the words any person in Section 83 encompass independent contractors as well as employees. We agree with respondent. This is tax court talking. The language of the section covers the transfer of any property transferred in connection with the performance of services. The legislative history makes clear that Congress was aware that the statute's coverage extended beyond restricted stock plans for employees. The regulations state that the Section 83 applies to employees and independent contractors. There is no question but that under the foregoing circumstances, these regulations are not unreasonably and plainly inconsistent with the revenue statutes. Consequently, they are sustained. So I have tax court. Next, I have Pledger versus Commissioner, Fifth Circuit, that's CA5, Court of Appeals, Fifth Circuit, 1981. the taxing scheme imposed by Congress more accurately reflect what taxpayer received as compensation than a scheme that taxes the taxpayer on merely a portion of the compensation. Alves versus Commissioner. CIR is Commissioner of Internal Revenue. CA9, that's Court of Appeals, 9th Circuit, 1984. The plain language of Section 83A belies Alves' argument. Section 83A applies to all property transferred in connection with the performance of services. If Congress had intended Section 83 to apply solely to restricted stock used to compensate its employees, it could have used much narrower language. It applies to property transferred in connection with the performance of services, not just compensation for employment. Robinson versus Commissioner, another tax court case. To the contrary, the House and Senate reports specifically delineate transactions and transfers to which Section 83 was not to apply, and they do not exclude from its purview contractual provisions that were not tax-motivated. McNaughton versus Commissioner, Court of Appeals, 6th Circuit, 1989. The statute applied to all property transferred in connection with the performance of services, and they quote the Alves decision. If Congress had intended Section 83 to apply solely to restricted stock, they could use much narrower language. Then concurring with Cohn and Alves, we have the Court of Appeals, 7th Circuit, 1990, in the case of Centel Communications versus Commissioner. And at the bottom of page 2, we have Klingler Electric Company versus Commissioner, Southern District, U.S. District Court, Southern District of Mississippi, 1991. Section 83A applies to all property transferred in connection with the performance of services. Top of page 3, 5th Circuit, 1992, Montelepre SystemEd versus Commissioner. Section 83A explains how property received in exchange for services is taxed. 2011, 2nd Circuit, Goodmanson versus U.S. At the heart of this case is Internal Revenue Code Section 83, which governs the taxation of property transferred in connection with the performance of services. I have these decisions saying that Section 83 explains how to tax a paycheck, fees, commissions, salaries, tips, the rest of it. It governs the taxation of that property received for services. And yet here, finally, we have IRS officer, which means she can recommend prosecutions as opposed to a mere IRS agent. IRS officer Sue Besson, 20 years on the job, who performed over 500 investigations, on the stand in the tax evasion trial of Raymond Gebauer in August of 2007. This was U.S. District Court in Seattle, Washington. I watched her say this when I had tutored defense counsel on the operation of Section 83 and my interpretation. He has her on the stand. How long have you been an IRS officer? She said 20 years. How many investigations have you performed? 500. How did Section 83 operate in your conclusion that Mr. Gebauer owed an income tax on his compensation? And she replies, I am unfamiliar with Section 83, which is an outright lie. I've been hitting the IRS with this since 1992, 1993. They know all about Section 83. And a person that's been on the job for 20 years would rather lie and say she's unfamiliar with the statute that explains whether or not she's correct than get into an argument over it. Because Section 83 is universally applicable to any and all compensation, I have no choice but to comply with it when I calculate my income tax liability. More importantly, the IRS has the same obligation. I'm at the top of page 4, blue number 2. Labor is property, and its value is determined through the terms of an arm's-length transaction. Here are two court cases. You got to read these. This is the Supreme Court. Labor is the most sacred property and inviolable right of man. This was before the invention of refrigeration, when the slaughterhouse industry used ice to keep the meat from spoiling, and too many people were getting sick, and the government moved in to regulate the industry, and a bunch of the industry employees and unions sued, saying this violates our right to free labor. And so the Supreme Court gets into what is and is not your free right, and they describe labor as the most sacred and inviolable property of man. So it is property. Next is a paragraph from U.S. versus Cartwright, U.S. Supreme Court, 1973. The fair market value of any property. The fair market value is the price at which the property would change hands between a willing buyer and a willing seller, neither being under any compulsion to buy or to sell, and both having reasonable knowledge of the relevant facts. The willing buyer, willing seller test of fair market value is nearly as old as the federal income, estate, and gift taxes themselves, and is not challenged here. The next quote is from Pledger versus Commissioner. This is one of the Section 83 cases we saw above. The fair market value is that price which would probably be agreed upon by a seller and willing but under no compulsion to sell, and a buyer willing but under no compulsion to buy, where both have reasonable knowledge of the fact. So when I sell my labor to my customer, my client, my employer, that establishes the fair market value of labor. And there's Black's Law Dictionary, 6th edition, definition of arm's length transaction. So from my employer, from my customer, from my client, who are unrelated parties who pay me in arm's length transactions for my personal services, I receive fees, commissions, tips, salaries, vacation pay, sick pay, medical benefits, dental benefits, company car, a pension, all things paid in connection with the performance of my services under the contract governing my obligation to the one purchasing my services. Those amounts are the value of my personal services. Contract value equals fair market value. Number three, blue number three, top of page six. When the law says any or any property, it is construed as all-inclusive. As used in statute and regulations, the term any or any property are to be construed as all-inclusive until express statutory exceptions can be cited to support a contention that such terms are not all-inclusive. These are four Supreme Court cases that the U.S. government won, all arguing that very thing, that the statute says any or any property. And unless there's a law that excludes something from any or any property, it's all-inclusive. And there's a description of the four cases. Monsanto was a heroin manufacturer and distributor. And when they seized any property under the civil forfeiture statutes for a drug felon, they took all his money. And he said, you got to leave me attorney's fees. And they said, there's nothing in the law that says we got to leave you attorney's fees. The law says we can seize any property. And the government won. So when the government argues that it's all-inclusive, the government wins four times in the U.S. Supreme Court. And we're not going to read every part of this excerpt from Monsanto, beginning on page 7. I'll leave that to you to read. If all you did was read the bold and italicized parts, you'll come away with the understanding that I had when I read all four of those Supreme Court cases. At the end, and I'm at the bottom of, or the top of page 9, the Supreme Court's rulings are good enough for me when they're based on all relevant evidence. Even more important for the purposes of Section 83 is the fact that the government won these four cases arguing that the term any means everything unless the law expressly provides otherwise. Page 10, blue number 4. What is your interpretation of Tax Code Section 83A? Here it is right here. Section 83A of the Internal Revenue Code is called property transferred in connection with the performance of services. And you'll see that I've bold and italicized what I feel to be the only operable terms and phrases for the purposes of somebody, 99.9% of America, who has simply sold their labor as a sole proprietor, self-employed individual, or as an employee. The rest of it doesn't come along with me when you follow me down right below that, where all I have is the bold and italicized portions of Section 83A. And you see that if in connection with the performance of services, property is transferred, the excess of the value of such property, meaning the value of the compensation, over the amount, if any, paid for such property, not the whole paycheck, only the excess over the value of the paycheck, shall be included in gross income of me, the person who performs such services. Isn't that greatly simplified? If you went back and you read this statute, you'd think it was from outer space. It's a tax statute. This is the nature of tax law, where you get into it and it'll run circles around you until you clean it up and take out everything you simply don't have to know to get to the bottom of the meaning of the statute. It's the instance of 99.9% of Americans who just sell their labor is much more simple than everything they put into this statute. And I gleaned from the statute everything I need to know, and I put that in the paragraph right below that where it says Section 83, property transferred in connection with the performance of services. If, in connection with the performance of services, property is transferred, the excess of the fair market value of that property over the amount, if any, paid for such property shall be included in gross income, my gross income. Before I can determine the excess, I have to determine the amount paid. This is the definition of income. Income is defined in the tax code. There's case law out there that says it's not defined in the tax code. Income is profit. Cost defines profit. Cost is defined in the tax code as the amount paid. Section 83 is the definition of cost and therefore is the definition of income for the purposes of someone who has merely sold their personal services for a fee, commission, tips, salary, wages, sick pay, the rest of it. And we have the definition of the term amount paid in regulation. This is 26 CFR 1.83-3G, Code of Federal Regulations. It's a regulation under Section 83. Amount paid. For the purposes of Section 83 and the regulations thereunder, the term amount paid refers to the value of any money or property paid for the transfer that Section 83 applies to. Any money or property. Labor is property. Refers to the value of any money or property. The contract value of labor. The amount paid refers to the contract value of the labor. The contract value includes anything that an unrelated party is willing to pay me for my labor. And revisiting Section 83, the statute, the excess of the value of my labor over the excess of the value of my paycheck over the value of my labor shall be included in gross income. They would rather lie and say they are unfamiliar with Section 83 than get dragged into this argument. So I don't mean to be confrontational, I mean to be sensible. When I say, if you have an alternative conclusion about this statute, you know more than the Department of Justice and the Internal Revenue Service, or they surely would have offered that contrary or counter interpretation. They would rather lie than get into it. So the anti-tax movement, the army of accountants and tax attorneys and financial planners and taxpayer advocates, H&R Block, J.K. Harris, Ronnie Deutsch, Taxmasters, the rest of them, they practice IRS manuals, and they practice what the IRS will and won't allow you to do. They don't know this. They do not apply this to your compensation for services when you pay them to prepare your tax returns. Moving on, top of page 11, blue number 5, conclusion. It doesn't get any easier than this. One statute, one regulation, and all the case law in the world in support. You won't find a single accountant or tax attorney who knows anything about Section 83 and its relevance and importance. The only reason for their ignorance has to be that they never bothered to read the tax code, for if they had, they surely would have come across Section 83. Can anyone rightfully claim to be a tax expert when they haven't even read the tax code? No. What business does anyone have suggesting that the tax code should be rewritten or simplified if they aren't even aware of the statute that explains how to tax compensation? What if, like the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, the tax code is complex for the purposes of hiding the true nature of the law? I can't get the government to place onto the record its own interpretation of Section 83, no matter how antagonistic and confrontational I can get away with being in pleadings in federal tax cases. If you have an interpretation of Section 83 that differs from my conclusion, that it really that it treats all property, including labor or personal services, as a cost, you're a better tax lawyer than all such attorneys at the IRS and the DOJ, and all IRS employees who are unfamiliar with Section 83. What are the ramifications if the federal government is indeed depriving you and all Americans of the provisions of Section 83 to steal the amounts it calls an income tax on the value of your personal services? Doesn't this in fact make a felon of every official, agent, and employee of the federal government who's involved in the enforcement of the tax code? Isn't it true that the law from coast to coast allows any person with knowledge or reasonable suspicion that a felony has been committed to arrest the felon and to take them to the authorities? Yes. Would you like a compilation of citizens' arrest cases in federal courts from across America? Would you like a list of federal felony statutes that the federal government violates through this misenforcement of the tax code? How does Section 83 operate in the conclusion that you have gross income to report and to pay an income tax on when all you received was the fair market value of your personal services? Is what the IRS demands actually a tax, or is it extortion and racketeering? All of this is covered in the manual on Section 83, Codebreaker, the Section 83 equation. And these are valid questions. I have to comply with this statute. I don't have a choice. So I'm not out here like the anti-tax movement with a theory, some bottle of snake oil, some mythology. I'm not peddling anything that's fictional. I don't have a choice. The IRS doesn't have a choice. U.S. District Court doesn't have a choice. The judges, the IRS agents, the U.S. attorneys, nobody has a choice. Section 83 applies to all compensation. It explains how to tax it. It governs the taxation of compensation for services. I don't have a choice. And here I've sketched my interpretation of Section 83, and I'm offering a manual that I wrote in 1994. I've added an epilogue of perhaps 30 pages or more in March of 2014 to bring it up to speed and to further drill you on the parameters of Section 83 and the burden of proof that I feel should be placed on any public servant that says you have an obligation to pay an income tax on the value of your labor. Again, none of this is legal advice. My name is David Merlin. Thank you for listening, and thank you for visiting TakeFromCaesar.us.